This is The Creative Way on the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Vanessa Finney. My guest today is cellist Camden Shaw, who spent the first 11 years of his life in Ashland. He's back in his hometown this Sunday to open the Chamber Music Concert Series with his renowned ensemble, the Dover Quartet. Camden, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Pleasure to be here.
Can you start by explaining your roots in Ashland?
Yeah, well, I was born in Ashland. In fact, I think my parents walked down to the hospital from the place we were living in at the time, and when my mom was going to give birth, and I lived in Ashland until I was 11 years old. My family has, and my parents live there again now. We, as a family, we moved away for a while, but my parents were always going back. And my father was the conductor of the Rogue Valley Symphony for, I think, something like 27 years. It was a very long time. So music was always a very big part of our life, but also Ashland. And we have so many long friends that we're always thrilled to spend time with. And I can't believe that I get to perform in a place like Ashland and get to share my family and friends with my work colleagues. And now we've played there a few times. And so they know what to look forward to. And it's very, very special for me to get to be home and sharing the music that we play.
So growing up with your dad, was it a given that you were going to follow him into the music world? Or when did that reveal itself to you?
It was not at all a given. And so actually both of my parents were professional musicians. My dad was a conductor and educator, and my mom was a violinist and educator. And in some ways, I think because they knew the ins and outs of the world so intimately, they were the furthest thing from pressuring me to go into a career in music. They were always very adamant that music be a part of our lives, my sister and myself. But it was not, there was no pressure to do it professionally. In fact, I think they were a little cautionary when I started to suggest, it was my early teens. I was thinking, I think I'd really love to be a professional cellist. And I think they were happy, but they were also very, they were just cautious. They wanted me to think about it carefully and, you know, say, this is, you're going to have to work nights and, you know, got to travel a lot probably if things go well. And so they were, I think, really, really helpful, but not at all pushy.
From your end, though, were you encouraged? Because here you have two great models in your family of people who were making their living, a consistent living for decades from music. So did that make the prospect a little bit more realistic than it might for someone else?
I can't imagine that it had no effect in that dimension. Yeah. I mean, it was the soup I was growing up swimming in. So it seemed normal to me. And I loved getting to go to rehearsals, even as a little kid, watching the orchestra, listening to them work. And it just seems normal, but also magical at the same time. I mean, it's a very special thing to get to work on for a living. And I think they made it seem very, like a very safe place to be, you know, professionally, that was something, and also something meaningful and in a way noble to work on. So certainly I admired my parents very much. And I think I felt inspired and comfortable going into that.
And where did you end up doing your musical studies? And how did you meet up with what became the Dover Quartet?
I remember actually my dad went to a symposium of sorts on the East Coast, and he went to Philly and went to the Curtis Institute of Music. He'd also seen how many of the soloists that he really admired were graduates of Curtis, even though it's a very small school. But there was a pattern emerging. I remember when my family, when we moved to Seattle, we also just kept noticing that a lot of the visiting artists that we really liked were from this little school in Philadelphia. So I ended up applying to Curtis, and it was actually the only music school I applied for at the time, because I was just so adamant that that's where I wanted to go. And I was very, very fortunate to get in and met my future long-term colleagues there. And so everyone in the Dover Quartet, we all went to undergrad at the Curtis Institute. And it's an incubator for inspired classical musicians. And I think to their credit too, they're letting that idea become more and more inclusive and flexible as time goes on. But it's a great place to be a dreamer. And so I met three other dreamers there, and we started working really, really hard on the quartet. And then actually we did a master's degree together at Rice University in Texas, because Rice is one of the few schools in the country that has a string quartet master's degree. And it was amazing. They have incredible faculty at Rice, the Sheppard School of Music, and it's an amazing place to study. And so we did 2 years there and then really started on the professional circuit after that.
This is The Creative Way. I'm Vanessa Finney. My guest is cellist Camden Shaw. He's part of the renowned Dover Quartet, playing at Southern Oregon University on October 12th. So tell us about your three musical partners.
The two violinists are Joel Link on first violin and Brian Lee on second violin. I've known them both since I was 16 years old. They're incredibly gifted, but more importantly, they're incredibly honest communicators of emotion, and they're very accessible emotionally as musicians. They have very different skill sets in a way, artistically, which is perfect for a quartet, because people always think that in a quartet you want to be identical to your neighbor, and it's actually much more about completing a picture together. So of course there are many ways in which you do want to match artistically so that things don't stick out extraneously, but really you're completing flavor just like different spices in a dish. And I think Joel and Brian are just, they're really two of my favorite violinists in the world. They're incredibly facile on the instrument, but again, they have so much to offer emotionally and very different colors. So they don't get in each other's way, which is a real challenge in quartet. Usually there's one violinist that just captures everybody's attention and the other one is a shadow. And that's really not the case in our quartet. They're both just really commanding presences, and they're wonderful people to hang out with. I've spent thousands of hours on long drives in the car with them talking, and I still enjoy it. And we will be joined in this visit with a substitute violist, Hezekiah Lung, who is an amazing violist. And in fact, the last time that we played in Ashland, it happened that Hez was also playing with us. He's kind of one of these players that is part of the quartet family. We go back years and years with Hez. He's an amazing violist. So wonderful player, amazing musician, and so much energy and positivity in Hez that you'll hear. And he also really loves beer. He's always finding the best place for a beer in each town that we've been to. So we have some plans.
Well, speaking of Ashland, Chamber Music Concerts is opening its season with the Dover Quartet. What program do you have lined up?
The program we're playing in Ashland is a really, really cool one, because it spans many centuries and many styles, but they're also just all infant achievements in their own way. We're going to start the program with Jesse Montgomery's already iconic, it's a recent composition, but piece called Strum. And Jesse actually was a quartet player herself for many years and really understands the ways to get a lot of interesting colors out of the ensemble. But it's a really, really cool piece that sort of explores bluegrass and Appalachian strum rhythms in a long-ish. I mean, it's maybe 10 minutes, but in a sort of classical format. And it's quite virtuosic. It's quite difficult. It's played a lot, deservedly so. And it's a really fun way to start a program.
And actually, we have a clip of this. And set us up. This is actually from a performance of the Dover Quartet in Chicago. Tell us about this performance.
So this was actually part of the launch of a new series in Chicago that really is aiming to support new music, called Nova Linea Musica. And actually, one of our very good friends and colleagues, when we were teaching at Northwestern University, Desiree Rustrat, helped start that series, and it's really quite tremendous. So yeah, we played Strum there, and I remember it's a tiny room there in Chicago with so much focus from the audience. It's really loud and really like it just feels like the audience is part of the quartet. And it was a blast.
You're listening to The Creative Way on the Jefferson Exchange. We just heard a bit of the Dover Quartet's interpretation of Jesse Montgomery's Strum. Camden, what else is on the program for Ashland on October 12th?
lot of cool music. The next piece after Strum will be Karol Szymanowski's first quartet. And actually, just as a personal story with this piece, for the record, also, I'm talking to you from Houston, Texas, right now, where the quartet will perform tomorrow. And in that hall where we're going to play tomorrow, I was sitting in the very back. I was a student at Rice at the time and heard the Tokyo Quartet play this piece, the first quartet of Szymanowski. And from the very first 10 seconds, I was just absolutely enraptured with this quartet. It's an amazing piece of music. It needs to be played so much more than it is. And it really is one of the all-time most beautiful, beguiling, just astonishing openings of any string quartet. So I'm really excited to share it with audiences this year because, again, it just deserves a lot more airtime than it usually gets.
And then you're doing a Haydn.
Yes, this early Haydn, well, early-ish from the Opus 20 set. So it's when Haydn was comfortable writing quartets, but they were still sort of a transition away from string trios. And so there's a lot of things where the viola and cello double each other. And I always enjoy looking over at the violist and just trying to play perfectly in tune octaves together all the time. But the writing is so inventive and fresh. And it's really actually this one in particular, the last movement is so much fun. If you are playing it without having a huge smile on your face, you're absolutely failing at something. Because it's impossible not to have a great time playing that piece. It's really, really joyful and fiery too, actually.
And then you
Yeah.
round it out with Mendelssohn.
The Mendelssohn Opus 80. Yeah. So speaking of fire, this is a really, really different kind of fire, though. And it w was written, of course, after Mendelssohn's sister had passed away. And it's full of this really complex rage. But there's the feeling that it's a rage against something inevitable and natural too. And whether we're, I don't know, implanting that on our knowledge of how he really, what he was going through at that moment, it is possible. But I do think there's something in the music that there's an indignation at going through this horrible loss. And it's funny because Mendelssohn, we know him for his sensitivity and beautiful melodic writing that's instantly memorable and singable. And this piece is a really different side of the same person. It's a really incredible piece of music. It's just one of his best achievements as a composer. And it's hard to even talk about it without getting emotional. It's very, very powerful.
In the minute or so we have left, how does the Dover Quartet choose its repertoire?
Great question. So we start every season by with each member submitting what we call a dream piece, and the idea is that it's basically not vetoable. So if someone truly feels that they want to spend this card on a piece that is very difficult to learn, maybe a little scary for the other members, it's still the idea is we want everyone to feel that artistically they can go after something quite dramatic if they want to. So nothing will be off limits. But that doesn't mean that every year someone's dream piece is outrageously difficult or something like that. But we start with then so four dream pieces, and then we figure out what the feeling of that season is looking like and what it needs. Like if we were chefs at a restaurant, what is this menu? What is it missing? So that there, a lot of people are going to feel like, oh, they want a, a Haydn to balance this out, or they want something maybe early 20th century. How can we find that? So it fills out very naturally like a menu. And then basically the concert presenters actually, they look at that menu and they usually choose the items off the list, just like someone going into a restaurant. So, and it actually takes a lot of pressure off of us because presenters know their audience very well, at least they should. They know what they have on the whole season, so they can fit it into a context of a lot of different vectors. But usually they choose a very nicely balanced program, and I think this is a really great example of that, where there's a lot of variety. It's not going to be overly long, but there's just a huge amount of variety, and I think you'll hear just the spectrum of what a string quartet can sound like in one evening, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, that's interesting. Your democratic process for selecting that. I love that.
We're small enough that it's possible. It's
Good
great.
point. Yeah. Camden Shaw, thank you so much for taking time to talk with me, and I really look forward to your concert.
It was a pleasure. Thanks so much for having me, Vanessa. We're looking forward very much as well. See you then.
See you then. You've been listening to The Creative Way on the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Vanessa Finney. My guest was Ashland native Camden Shaw, who's the cellist in the Dover Quartet. The quartet opens the Chamber Music Concert Series October 12th at Southern Oregon University's Music Recital Hall. You can learn more at chambermusicconcerts.org.